5 cents. I would dig deep into my pocket and I would bring out a whole big bunch of change. And when they saw how much money I had, they started asking me for more money. So the next time they asked me for a loan, I would turn my back and I wouldn't let them see how much money I had and only gave them what they asked for. And I also want to tell you that I never got my money back. I can't remember any of my brothers paying me my few cents that I used to lend them. Thank you. Bye. Story number 12. It was with the family visit to Uncle Pollock. We were there and my brother Ye was outside playing with somebody, and I don't know who it was, but anyway, they got into some kind of a argument, or got an argument with a passerby young man, and there was some pushing, and Ye said, "I'm going to go call my big brother." So Ye's big brother Mutt came out to defend his little brother Ye, and it wasn't long before Mutt came back into the house, and Mutt had the black eye. Anyway, can you imagine Mutt sitting at the dinner table every night covering up his eyes so Mom wouldn't see the black one, the black and blue marks there? And that's what he had to do for the next few days. One more short story about Mutt and myself. I was dating Eve Steinberg, who I eventually married, and I was going over to her house. She lived 834 Moimensing Avenue, and Mutt was going somewhere, and he decided he would walk with me to 834 Moimensing Avenue. When I knocked on Eve's door, when she saw me, Mutt describes the action. She grabbed me by my shirt, pulled me to where both feet left the ground, and that was the last thing I saw of my brother Mutt for a while. One story about my brother Ye and his mishigas about going to the track. My brother enjoyed going to the track for the main race. He'd go to the track every day and just watch one race. But he would go late in the program, and he never bought a program. He would pick it off the ground. He never bought the racing form. He would find that in a garbage can. And his cost of playing the horses was only his bet. He never paid to get in, never bought the program, and never bought the newspaper. And they called me cheap. One last story is my relationship with my loving sister Frida. I guess I loved that girl since I was a little baby. And as I got a little bit older, it was time for my bar mitzvah. And because of a very serious speech defect, I wasn't able to go through with what I had learned from my bar mitzvah classes. But my sister, in her wisdom, bought me a birthday present. It was the only present I got for my 13th birthday. I love her dearly. Bye. My next story I'll call Mutti Gerson's Bicycle versus Sol Blacker's Automobile. Sol Blacker was married to my sister Frida, and Sol owned a 1929 Ford convertible Kook, which he tried to trade in on another car. Now the dealer offered Saul $25 in trade-in value on the other car. Saul was so insulted because this was a good running car that was only valued at $25. So he went to my brother Mutt and he offered him a trade. He will give Mutt his 1929 Chevy convertible, even trade on Mutti's bicycle. Mutti thought and thought and thought, and finally, after several hours of deep thought, told Saul that no, he didn't want to trade. He thought the bicycle was worth more than the car. End of story.
Okay, it's recording, I guess. This is Uncle Mike. Big brother Mike. Continuing Nate's story with that rumble seat car. The car was worked on every spring. It was only four cylinders. So Saul, let him rest in peace, had no peace with that car. He took the head of the motor off, and with a putty knife, he scraped the carbon off, put in a new gasket, put the head back on it again, tightened up the bolts, and the car ran for another year. Because in those days, you didn't have automobile trouble. There was only four cylinders. So Mutt wasn't the smart one. He was dumb for not trading in a $2 bicycle for a $25 junker. What else can I say? Probably all the stories have already been told. But part of my life was the Saturday afternoon trip to the movies that Mom, with all her welfare check, managed to scrape up enough money to send all her kids to the Colonial movies from 12 o'clock until she came to get us. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, we sat in the same seats, and we had the same lunch every Saturday. Kosher bologna sandwiches with mustard. And everybody knew where the Gerson family sat because they smelled the garlicky bologna. That was the highlight of each week. What else can I tell you now that I don't... Oh, yes, I got one I don't think they remember. Rita does, but I don't think the rest. Because I think it was her sweet 16 party on Monarch Street. And she had all her girlfriends over for a party out in the yard. During the course of the afternoon, when all the girls were out in the yard and all having a good time, balloons with water or paper bags with water, I don't know which, came down from the roof. Tony Casamento, who lived on the corner, climbed up the roof and came over with the balloons of water and dumped them on the girls. That was the end of that party. Outside. Frida just reminded me. In my junior high school days, I took up Indian lore, folklore, and it was Indian dancing. And I remember the teacher's name, Mr. Gaskell. He was the teacher of this Indian lore. And he used to teach us the different tribal dances. And we were so good that we used to go from school to school. Now, in order to prepare for this stuff, we had loincloths that we wore. Indian headdresses that we made, they were handmade, because I remember a cigar box. We used to take a coping saw and make little grooves on each side of the cigar box, and then ran the strings from one side to the other. And then we had this graph paper, all little blocks, where we made our designs, and then we would count out red bees, white bees, powder to make our bodies bronze like the Indians. That never washed off. Never. That was the best dye you ever saw. But I remember performing in another school, and I was an Indian that happened to be shot. And I dropped to the floor. And what happened? Everything hung out. But I couldn't get up, and I couldn't stay down. It was a problem that day. I'll never forget it as long as I live. What else can I tell you? About our lives. One more story. You know, today it's a must that you go to college. Without college, forget about it. Because the first 4 years of college is what we used to get as an education when you graduated high school. That is, in my opinion, anyways. So we were the rich ones. We lived on welfare, Jewish welfare. In those days, we didn't have welfare like it is today. Each religion took care of its own people. The Jews took care of their own, it was known as Jewish welfare, it was known as Catholic welfare, but each one took care of their own people. When I graduated high school, the very next day I was given a job to drive a truck for Mendel Fine, leather and shoe findings at 6th and Bainbridge. For one full year, I walked to work and came back from work because my total wages for the week, 6 days a week, was $6 a week. And by the way, I got married on $6 a week at that time. When I married Leah, I was making $6 a week and she was making 10, so we had $16 a week between us when we got married. I'll tell you all a little secret now. Leah and I eloped the year before. We were married in Wilmington Delaware. But getting back to Mendel Fine, when I got my $6 each Saturday, I had to turn them over to Mom, because Mom's welfare check was deducted by $6. And she used to give me $1 for the week, so that included car fare and spending money. Because once I took with the bologna sandwich. At the end of the year, I went to Mendel Fine, who was the upright citizen of Bainbridge, the most religious Jew that went to shul every week, every Saturday he went to shul. His place of business stayed open, but he went to shul. And I said, Mendel, it's a year now. I'm entitled to another dollar a week. He says, yes, you are. But before I give you the other dollar a week, you're fired. So he went back to welfare and got someone else to replace me for $6 a week. But it was a growing up life that everybody, most everybody, whom you live with, who you went out with, we all live with the same pair of boots. Everyone had the same problems. If you worked, you were lucky. And if you didn't work, you hung out on the corner at Meyer's Candy Store. And if you took a piece of candy, didn't pay for it, and he didn't see it, you came out ahead. But that's the type of life we grew up with. Now I'll turn it over to Aunt Frieda for the next one.
This is Aunt Frieda again. We, the children of Abraham and Bessie Gerson, Oliver Shalom, have related our stories, our memories, where we came from, and created for you a past. These tapes are a mirror of our love for each other and our love for you, our children. I'm entrusting this bit of our recorded family history to the light of my life, my son, Avram Yoel, whom I lovingly refer to as Joel. It was his insistence that prompted me to pursue this recording. And now, The ball is in your court. Play the game.